this week's podcast, I had a brilliant idea. Oh my word. Have you ever been a tourist in your own town or your own city? A long time ago, I was getting my car MOT'd on the other side on the Wirral. And I left my car and all of a sudden, I don't know why, I thought it was a beautiful day. I'll jump the ferry, jump one of the tour buses and go to Liverpool. Do you know, I had one of the best days of my life. And you see things and you know yourself when you drive around Liverpool or drive anywhere, you miss looking up. And that's the sad thing. We miss so, so much. So I thought, it's time to be a tourist in my own town. I'm going to be talking about this throughout the interview with this fabulous young man. And I thought, there's so many tours in Liverpool. Who do I pick? And somebody said, there's only one, and that's Dale. You've got to see Dale. So I thought, go on a Beatles tour with Dale and some friends, and let's see if I learn anything. Oh, my word, did I learn stuff. Dale, hi.
Hello, Pete.
How are you?
I'm good. It's fantastic to be on.
Right, now, first of all, let's talk about the opposition. Before we talk about you, before we talk about your tours, how much is there in Liverpool that people can use to tour?
Okay, when I first got involved in tours, this is, 2017, I became head of market of the Open Top Tour Buses. And I remember going on TripAdvisor, and there was 66 tours listed on TripAdvisor. And now, on TripAdvisor, there's at least 180. So that's since 2017, with a pandemic in between as well. So that's a ridiculous rate of growth. You have a massive amount of tours. You said the word opposition just then. I personally think there's enough work for everyone right now. There's so much growth in Liverpool that the rate of growth in terms of the tourism industry, you know, is it competition? No. I think there's enough work for everyone. We can all get by. But there's a massive amount of tours of every variety as well. Massive amount of bus tours, incredible amount of bus tours. And the Ducks coming back as well soon.
The Duck?
The Ducks are coming back. So the Ducks are coming back. We've got more walking tours now before. I got involved in eco tours 1 year ago. And when I first got involved, there was one cycle tour company in the city. And within 3 months, there was four cycle tours. Within 3 months of me getting involved in environmentally friendly tours. So that's a rapid rate of growth. I think it's only going to continue growing, and there's a huge question of how it grows, how to be responsible in growth. Hopefully it's not just a quick snatch and grab from a company where they shoot up for a moment and quickly set up a tour and then they're gone next week. And that happens quite often, and that's happened for years. But yet it's growing all the time, which is quite scary.
It is indeed. I went on tour with you, which we'll talk about shortly, and it was a dreadful day. It was a wet, wet day, but I've got to tell you, I had the best time. And what you don't know is I hate rain. I have got a thing about rain. Before we talk about it, first of all, and before we ask why you got interested in it, who's Dale? Tell us. I don't even know your second name.
Dale Roberts is my surname. But for me, I'm a lad from Liverpool, County Road, raised, you know.
And what sort of jobs have you done?
I've done about 30 different jobs in my life, many different varieties. Going back many, many years here, Pete, my dad's a church pastor, so he's an evangelical minister of a church in Anfield. And for years, when I was 19, I was on four different youth work committees. I wanted to be a youth worker. I wanted to work with young people in the city, and that's what I was passionate about. But coming from the church background, it'd be considered sort of a youth pastor. I was a youth pastor in training. I was on four different youth work committees, and I started preaching in churches and in youth clubs, not only in Liverpool, but around the Northwest. I remember being on a church stage, as well, a pulpit in a church in Wales, you know, so, and being in Bournemouth as well in a pulpit down there. So I was very religious, very evangelical Christian, and then, long story short, got engaged at 20, married at 21, became a dad at 22, and I was divorced by 26. So a lot of things happened, but the big thing for me is I left the church at 23. There was no real funding in youth work publicly. And in the church as well, it was very hard for me to make that step. I was doing it all, but it was free. But of course, I needed to find work. I was working in, you know, many different capacities, and I was doing labouring jobs, any odd job that I could do. Sales jobs, lots of social media work. And then, yeah, eventually I left the church. I had no real direction of where do I go from here? Truthfully, that was a huge moment in my life, if I'm being honest. Not only in terms of career and direction, but in terms of family life and personal life and things with friends and everything. Everything changed at 23 for me. I'll be honest with you, I actually started thinking there's nothing really in Liverpool for me to do. Because let's not forget, it was just after the global economic crash and the recession. All of a sudden, I was like, what do I do? And I remember writing up a big plan of moving to Australia and having this whole idea, I'll move to Australia, there's jobs over there, there's nothing for me in Liverpool, what does Liverpool have to offer? And I think it was probably that question that prompted the overall view of what does Liverpool have to offer for me in my brain, because I was thinking about it really personal for myself, you know, why am I staying here? I can move anywhere, why don't I go? And that prompted that question, but yeah, I was a huge Beatle fan, a massive fan of the Beatles, and yeah, I moved to Wavertree. I was 25. I had friends who lived in Wavertree, and I'll never forget just going around to George Harrison's birthplace one day, and just standing there, Arnold Grove in Wavertree, no blue plaque, no flashing lights, just thinking, a Beatle was born in this house, this is crazy. And in that moment, it sort of prompted that sort of crossover, what does Liverpool have to offer me? I'm a huge Beatle fan. And the greatest band in the world came from this city, and I started intensely studying it, but not from an academic perspective.
Let me hold it there, because we'll go back to that, of course. We're going to be talking about that. Just want to ask you one question about the religion, and I'm curious. I lost my religion when my mother died. Because of your intensity with religion, where does religion fit into your life now, and how hard was it to step away from?
I was 23, and truthfully, I've always had an issue where I'm a bit too brave, maybe overambitious, and probably just daft, plain old stupid, truthfully. Was it a hard decision? Yes, it was a hard decision, but when I look back at it in retrospect, it was the hardest decision of my life, you know, because I didn't know what was happening. I just thought, no, I don't believe this anymore, and it was almost like a coming out moment, I'll be honest, and I've explained this to a few friends. It was like I had to come out as non-religious to my friends and family, and it was like a prolonged process as well. I'd bump into friends down the shop, and they'd go, oh, what church are you going to now? And I'd go, oh, don't go to church. And they'd go, oh, they were all shocked. And then I'd see another friend the next day, what church are you going to? I don't go anymore. In the end, I was on Facebook, just, here you go. Guys, I don't go to church anymore, I've left it. And that shocked all the people. It was like, wow. Hardest decision in my life, probably the biggest. It was the biggest decision. It transformed my life.
So where's religion now, if anywhere? If anywhere?
I spent years probably feeling a bit bitter towards it, Peter, I won't lie. I felt quite bitter, thinking, I've wasted so much time. That was my path in life. I'll never forget, it was actually a moment, I was sat in my old bedroom in Tubebrook at the time, and I looked out the window, and it was that sort of first moment I looked at the sky and I thought, how the fuck did we get here? You know, that was a moment for me. It was like, why am I here? How did we get here? And I had none of the answers, so it was a huge moment. Where does that fit now in my life? I don't know. I'll be honest with you, I've sat quite agnostic for years. I was quite, like, I wouldn't say even anti-religion, so I don't want to say anti-religion. I had questions. And by the way, it was not impersonal towards the people of the church as well. I should actually add that. Like, the people of the church, some of the loveliest people I've met are church-going people, so it wasn't personal towards them. It was personal for me. It was a case of I didn't feel anymore like I could live, not a lie, but live something that I wasn't fully believing or true to myself. The second I started questioning things and I wasn't passionate about going to church, I wasn't all in. So in my mind, I was all out, you know. These days, it's a bit more of a middle ground. I'm not all out and I'm certainly not all in. But I do have a belief. I do have a belief in something. I just don't know what.
Just to finish off with religion, which is really interesting. I lost my religion and I was a choir boy. So I was into the church for a while. Didn't know what I was doing, whatever, whatever, whatever. But I always remember Bishop Tom, and I've told this story so many times and I love it. He, to me, is one of the most amazing religious people I've ever met. And I interviewed Bishop Tom, who was the Catholic bishop, a tremendous scouser. And I said, Bishop Tom, I've lost my religion and I'm quite sad about it. To which Bishop Tom said, You'll find it. How are you? And that, to me, was the most amazing thing in my life. I think it's great that you've been honest with us about the religion, which is super. Because it's just getting a background of who you are. Because, first of all, you're a great talker. And up in the pulpit, that's helped with training.
I've said for years, I owe it to my dad. Like, when I left the church, me and my dad... of course, it broke my mum and dad's heart. Let's not forget that. My mum and dad are deeply religious people. And so when I left the church, all of a sudden, things might have been a bit frosty, but they were still loving and caring towards me, and even though it was frosty. And I've said, and I've been on other podcasts and said that, I owe my dad everything. My dad always had... He had a great way of telling stories. He always used illustrations. He was a storyteller rather than just standing up and saying passages and bits and bobs and facts and figures. It was story-based, and that's where I approach tour guide, and it's story-based, not look left, look right, 1983. It's not that. It's story-based. People connect to people. And my dad always said, people don't care what you believe until they believe that you care. And that little saying for me has stuck with me, and it's very similar to the Maya Angelou quote in my mind, which was, people will forget what you say, but they'll never forget how you made them feel. So it's these little sort of quotes and principles that I've learned from the church over the years that I've took into what is tour guiding. And tour guiding is not the most glamorous of professions, but I do genuinely view it as an art form of telling stories.
You also bring a joy to people. Now, in Japan, there are people there, there's a tradition, and I've forgotten what it's called, where they tell stories, and some of the most famous people in Japan tell stories. That's what they do for a living. So I don't decry what you do, because you are also showing in Liverpool, particularly because you're here, you're showing Liverpool the world what a fabulous place Liverpool is. So I think it's great. Now, we'll put the religion to one side. Let's talk about the tours. And thank you for being honest over that. I'm talking to Dale Roberts about Beatle tours. And I started off by saying, have you ever been a tourist in your own town? Tell me when you first discovered the Beatles themselves.
Oh, wow, the Beatles. I mean, we're from Liverpool, so it's a difficult one. I mean, I'd ask you when you discovered the Beatles, but you obviously went to...
You weren't born.
Exactly. But you were part of the whole scene, so you probably can remember that moment. For me, I was brought up in the city that has the Beatles connected to it, but I always feel it doesn't make enough of the Beatles, but that's another subject altogether. But growing up, of course, I knew Yellow Submarine and Hey Jude and all the major Beatles songs, but... my mum and dad weren't gigantic fans of the Beatles. Maybe the religion played a part in that, who knows. But they weren't gigantic Beatle fans. My mum was more into her Motown music, and my dad was more of the sort of punk era as well, of Sex Pistols and things like that. So they were never huge Beatle fans.
So there's three different types of music in your family, for a start.
Absolutely, from the off. And my granddad was a huge Neil Diamond fan. My nan was a huge Elvis fan. So there was never this sort of diehard Beatle fan within the family. But for me, I'll never forget, I was in the car, and this is my awakening to the Beatles. It wasn't a discovery of them. I was in the car, and it was a rubbish compilation album, and I've never found it since, and I wish that I could. But it had a John Lennon song on the album, which was called Dear Yoko. And it's an obscure John Lennon song. Not many people know it. But I listened to it and I thought, that's a great little song. I quite like that. And it prompted me interest in John and Yoko. I was like, hold on, I know a bit about this, but I don't know enough. And I went away and I listened to every John Lennon song for about a week. And then I downloaded every George Harrison song and then every Paul McCartney song.
So you did
song.
It in stages?
Yes, I did. Downloaded every Paul McCartney song. And I've never got round to getting to every Ringo song, unfortunately.
Well, don't even start me on Ringo, as I was a George Best fan. Pete Best fan. George Best. I bought shares in his company. I'm diversing. Now, this is a question you must be asked all the time by people on the tour, and you only get one chance at this. So one chance. What's your favourite Beatles song?
Oh, In My Life.
That's it. That's great. That's great. So when did you discover you wanted to do tours? Was there one day you went, I could do that?
I never wanted to do tours. I'll be honest with you. I was actually passionately against tour guiding. And it's like I said to you a moment ago, you've said don't decry the profession, which I fully agree with. Wholeheartedly, storytelling's an art, and it should be an honour for people to show people around this city. This city's got so much history, and the story of this city deserves to be told, and it deserves to be told by people who are passionate about it, care about the story, and hopefully have some form of qualification in telling that story. I'm passionate about that. But I didn't want to be a tour guide. Every tour I'd been on up until that point was, like I said to you a moment ago, it was like, look left, look right, this date, that date. And I'd go away educated, thinking, okay, I've learned a few things, and I'd forget about it within a week because they didn't invoke a feeling of passion. And I remember it was 2017, I became head of marketing for the Open Top Tour buses, the Red Buses, which is ran by Philip Olivier, famously Tin Ed from Brookside. And Phil asked me to become head of marketing with him, so I worked alongside him. And one day he looked at me and said, Dale, the Americans love the Beatles, and there are going to be loads of them getting off the cruise ship soon. Can you set up a Beatles tour for me? I was like, okay. Again, like I said to you earlier, young, fresh, enthusiastic, probably just a bit daft. I was like, go on. So I sat there and I designed this Beatles tour, designed a route. Here's roughly what we'll say. We brought in more people in, we designed it together, and all of a sudden we had this City and Beatles tour set up, which I believed hit the market perfect. And we
now let me stop you there. How hard and how long did it take you to set it up? Because there's so many facts and figures. And as you say, you don't want to just do facts and figures. So how long from beginning to end to set it up?
Well, you've got, like, the first thing with the tour is a concept. What's the purpose? What's the point? You know, is it to entertain? Is it to educate? So it's those initial questions that I asked, which was like, what does the current market want? If they're coming into Liverpool, are they wanting to know about Pete Best? I think people deserve to know about Pete Best, but do they want to hear about Pete Best? And that's the first question of tour design, which is, what does the audience want? What does the market want? And at that point, I sort of had a firm belief that people coming here aren't massive big Beatle fans anymore.
Let me stop you there, because that's a really interesting statement you made. And we went on the tour. I went with Dale on the tour, so I understand it. You said, what do they want? But shouldn't they be, forget what they want, shouldn't they be told about Pete Best, who was, if you don't know, ladies and gentlemen, the first drummer who got sacked and replaced by Ringo? Shouldn't they be told that?
Yeah. I think they absolutely should, but do they want it? That's the question. So there's a market perspective and there's a responsibility perspective. I feel responsible for mentioning a guy called Ray McFall, and I do so on most tours that I do. I mention Ray McFall, but not a single person that I've ever done a tour for has booked a ticket for a tour because they want to hear about Ray McFall. I mean, maybe one. There was a guy, Peter McFall, who was Ray McFall's son, and I'm proud to have done it all for him, and it meant the world to him. But he was desperate to hear about his dad and hear what I said about his dad, and I love Peter. It was an honour to do it all for him. But I feel...
You can't stop it there. You've got to tell people who he is.
Peter McFall is the son of Ray, and Ray McFall was the man who employed the Beatles to play the Cavern at least 270 times. He also employed Jerry and the Pacemakers, the Searchers, the Big Three, the Remo Ford, Mayor's Beats, Live Birds, Cilla Black, everyone.
They are, ladies and gentlemen. You found out who it is. Leave it on that. If you want to know more, you'll hear on the tour. So go on, putting the tour together. When, did you one day, and I know you're a perfectionist because that's why you're doing well, but did you one day say, that works?
Yeah, there was a point with that City and Beatles tour where I was like, this is perfect. And I had a lad with me, Lee Jones. He was the general manager of the company at the time. He was the one who got the tour registered. So it has to, of course, go through all the legal checks, traffic commissioner and all the rest of it. And Philip Olivier was there overseeing it all. So the three of us put this tour together and sent it out on the roads. And at first, I was petrified. I remember it was the day before we launched the tour. We had this big... heated discussion in the office, and I looked at the lads and just said, this tour hits the market perfect. I'm proud of it. I think it's going to work. I'm confident it will. And it did, but at first it didn't seem like it was going to, and we couldn't get tour guides. For life or death, we could not get tour guides. We had to try and recruit as quickly as possible. And Lee, who was a qualified tour guide, he tour guided for 3 weeks straight. Every day, 3 weeks. It was hard on him. And he was like, please, Dale, you're a public speaker. You love the Beatles. Get up and tour guide.
So you didn't want to do it?
I didn't want to do it. I said, Lee, I'm not a tour guide. I'm head of marketing. I'm marketing, social media. That's what I do. I'm not a tour guide.
I've got to ask this question now because I'm old and I might forget later. And I really want to ask this question. Who tips and who doesn't?
This could get me in trouble, Pete.
No, you're generalising.
Generalising. British people are great for tipping. Irish people and Scottish people, great for tipping. And the Welsh, I'll say the Welsh, just in case. But yeah, the Brits are the best tippers. Americans are slacking a little bit, if I'm being very honest.
Which is strange, because in America, it's all about tipping.
It's all about tipping. If you're a musician in Nashville, for example, you're living on tips, you know. But the Americans, they tip, and they tip in dollars. If an American gets on the tour bus, they want you to know it's them who've left the tip as well. So they always tip in dollars. And I love the Americans, I really do. And you do get some greats. The Dutch are currently like my favourite. The Dutch tip great. They're lovely people. But yeah, they...
Come on, who are the bad ones? Which part of the world?
I'm going to get myself into it. I mean, the Spanish do tip if you're a Spanish tour guide. They don't tend to tip if you're an English tour guide. That's an interesting one. Yes, I've discovered that one recently. The Latino nations, I don't find... Maybe it's not part of their culture. The Chinese, the Asian nations don't tend to tip. Australians, you never get a tip off an Australian.
Right? See, you were very honest. That was great.
You're getting all my honesty out of it.
No, that was great, because people want to know stuff like that, and you never know. They might have booked you and go, well, I'm definitely going to have to tip. So I'm talking to Dale about the Beatles tour. What I love, and what I loved very much, Dale, at the start, and we started by the four Beatles statues at the pierhead, you started talking about Liverpool first, because it isn't just about the Beatles.
I have a firm belief, and this is something that goes back predating when I was a tour guide. The Beatles did not make Liverpool. Liverpool made the Beatles, and I'm very adamant on that. I mean, if you look at all the early clips of John Lennon when he gets off the plane in America, he is so blasé. And I think, and we say blasé, you know, nonchalant, whatever you want to call it. I think Scousers say not arsed. I mean, we're a not arsed city. And that's to our detriment. And it also works in the favour of the people of Liverpool. I think the only thing that the people of Liverpool are actually really arsed about is politics and football. I think they're the things that people are really asked about. The music, even if you go back to that Merseybeat era, I tell people about the story of Alan Caldwell, who was Rory Storm from Rory Storm and the Hurricanes. That was the band that Ringo was the drummer of. And Alan Caldwell, season ticket holder for Liverpool FC. If a gig got in the way of the football on a Saturday afternoon, he wouldn't do the gig. And that tells you everything you need to know, because Rory Storm and the Hurricanes were ranked higher than the Beatles at multiple points in the Merseybeat polls. But he wouldn't miss the football for it. So what I'm trying to say here is there's a very interesting culture of the people of Liverpool and the city. There's something in the water which creates the Beatles, which is this sort of group of lads who will take any risk necessary. They'll do whatever they want. They'll grow their hair long. They'll sing about whatever they want to sing about, because they are not arsed. And is that not the same mentality that we have across the city, even in 2024?
Now, you have your own company. What's it called?
Liverpool Eco Tours.
And how can they find out about it?
LiverpoolEcoTours.com. My own social media, at Dale Liverpool and Liverpool Eco Tours. So that's Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok.
I've got to ask the question. On the tours, do you get cocky people telling you that you're wrong, or telling you that it's not interesting, or challenging you? There's the word.
Well, you know what, Pete? I've just said about the people of Liverpool making, you know, this city. The people who get on tours are the thing I love the most. You've got to remember, I spend a lot of time with people from all around the world. So when you've said about tipping and the culture of different nationalities, that's one of the greatest things for me, is I don't have to travel, because everyone comes here. So I can meet people from 12 different nationalities every single day. And that's an average, by the way. Like, I do average about 12 nationalities per day if I'm guiding on a magical mystery tour or whatever else it might be. I meet people from all around the world, and of all ages and all backgrounds. But when I first started guiding, I was 27 years of age. And I'm talking about a band who, you know, like you said a moment ago, I wasn't born. This is all education from my perspective. So I get fellas, and again, there's a particular type of fella. It's not someone who was born when the Beatles were around. It's someone whose dad was born when the Beatles were around.
And they know it all.
Yeah, they know it all, because I think there's almost a psychological thing, which it was their connection to their dad, you know? And so they had to have an educated perspective of the Beatles as well. And so they see me as someone who's even younger than them. And I can't surely know more about the Beatles than them, because I've got their dream job. I'll be honest, I talk about the Beatles for a living. I make a full-time living talking about the Beatles, which is, you know, that's a great way to make a living, isn't it, in a way? And people see me, they get envious, and they come over and they'll ask something obscure, very obscure. And quite often I let them have it. At first I didn't, I'd sweat and I'd panic and I'd try and answer it. Nowadays I go, you tell me, mate, go on, what's the answer? You know, you should be doing my job, ha ha ha. And I make a joke of it just simply to bring them in, because that's what they want. Yeah.
The two things I learned about the tour, which was hysterical and it really made me laugh. One was the statue behind the town hall, which is, according to you, a facade. And in fact, the ventilation system for the tunnels underneath where the Battle of the Atlantic was fought, that stayed with me. The second was, one of my favourite clubs in the world was the Iron Door. And you actually showed me where it is, because there's a blue plaque. So I learned two things just from that. It was amazing.
And it's important to remember, we missed half the tour as well. I had to pull
because it was raining.
Which, it's great that after that, which was such a rainy, wet, miserable day, the amount of people who contacted me and said, I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was a great day. So for me, that means a lot. When you can do a tour in conditions when people's hands are freezing and it's raining, yeah, and people still enjoy it, for me, it's not testament to me. I just tell the story. It's the city. But yeah, I absolutely love doing it, you know, Pete.
Do you take from people and go, I'll use that line?
100%. Yeah. Like having you on the tour talking about Scylla and about the Arthur Dooley statue, that's an education for me. You know, when I have people on board the tour, like I mentioned a moment ago, I mentioned Ray McFall on most tours. And when Peter McFall done a tour with me a little while ago, he told me things about his dad, and it stays with me. And over time, I'll be honest with you, when I started guiding in 2017, and since then I've guided to, I estimate now over 100,000 people, well over 100,000. And I've gone 6.5 years without a single complaint. But that complaint, I only had one, and it's a long time ago. I learned from that. I read it, and I didn't just let it hit me and hurt my ego. I looked down and went, okay, how can I improve? And then every time I get on a tour, I continue doing that. I look at the audience and go, what do they want from me? And if I'm not getting a great reaction from them, from their face, then I'll adapt to what I'm saying and I'll change things and mould it. And then people will get on the tour and they'll tell me their story. They'll say things to me and I learn from them. And that's the beauty of it. You know, I'm not here as an arrogant person. I'm a storyteller. I'm there to learn from these people. I'm there to tell them a story and make sure they enjoy this city.
Are you doing cycle tours as well now?
Yeah, so I actually, a year ago, moved into doing cycle tours. I think cycling, especially on electric bikes, is one of the best ways to see the city. Because think about it, on a walking tour, it'll take 3 hours to get through the city centre. If you're doing a bus tour, yes, you can get further out, but you're not getting down the little side streets. You're not getting really off the beaten path. And if you're doing a tour of a park, for example, Sefton Park, it's going to take you a few hours to walk through it. On an electric bike, you can do the whole city and the suburbs, multiple parks, and the entire waterfront promenade of Liverpool in 3 hours.
That's amazing. Here's a question. Now, I was in Rome recently and saw it. What happens with, because it's not saturated like Rome is with tour guides, what happens about you've got your own little speck where you want to talk about it, somebody else comes along. Is there any aggravation between tour guides?
You're going to get all the gossip out of me with this one. This is a sting. It's one of the reasons why I set up Liverpool Eco Tours isn't just from the environmentally friendly perspective. I think we need to be progressive and responsible. There needs to be a system of etiquette within tour guiding in this city. There's so many tours now. There's so many tour guides. For me, my system of etiquette is if I get to a location and there's a tour there, it doesn't matter if my tour runs late. They were first ones to the pitch. They're going to say their story, but the etiquette from their perspective is that they speed up because there's another group turning up. And this happens for me every single day. Strawberry Field, Paul McCartney's house, when you're out in the suburbs, people do have that respect and they move on quite quickly. And then I wait. The last thing you want is two groups clashing at the same time.
You know, that's really good, that. But have you all discussed it? I mean, are there conferences amongst tour guides? Do you all live together?
No. The tour guide, again, I mean, if I'm being very honest here, and I will be candid, I promise you I will be honest. there's a lot of politics within tour guiding in this city, because the reality of it is maybe different than London and Bath and maybe even Rome. I don't know what the operation is there, but you don't have to be qualified to be a tour guide in this city. All you need to have is public liability insurance.
Really?
Yeah. In Liverpool, right now, if you just wanted to set up your own website and say, I do tours talking about, I don't know, P Price, you know, all you need is public liability insurance. You can go out and do a tour.
I'm made up. So I've found a new career, ladies and gentlemen. I don't have to pass any exams. I'm surprised at that, because in Europe, you have to pass exams.
Yeah. And to be honest with you, there are exams, but you just don't need them, which is crazy in a way. I think that there should be some sort of exam. There should be a standard set from the local body in the city. And it's something that further down the line, right now for me, it's about focusing on the tours. But for me, I'd love nothing more than to work with Liverpool City Council to find a standard. Because there's qualifications that you can get. There's the standard blue badge qualifications, green badge qualifications and everything, which are more regional specific. It's not specific to the Beatles or Liverpool or a food walking tour. It's so much more broader, and it brings in people from maybe Chester who are, you know, can get themselves a blue badge and then come here and do tours of Liverpool. So there's got to be a question of what is a tour guide, what is the standards? Are they observing good etiquette and good practice? Are they certainly not lying to customers? That's the most important thing. The last thing we want is people coming here and getting the tour guide who's completely rogue and just tells them whatever they want.
I love you saying that. I've got to be careful how I say this. I went on a tour. I can't tell a story. All I'll say is the person I was with, who was fabulous, told us this unbelievable story, and I went on it again, and the second time was a totally different story. I really, really cleaned that one up. I'll tell you off who I'm talking about, if you don't already know. And don't be ringing me on this podcast saying, what's going on? Who are you talking about? I have got to ask this, and it's not just our city, it's every city. How do you and tour guides deal with people who are begging?
Oh, okay, well, do you remember when we did the tour the other day? We went to the Church of Our Lady in St. Nicholas, and inside the ground there's a statue which is homeless Jesus, and there's over 50 of them dotted around the world, which is statues of, you know, it's just a bench and a guy laying on it, and when you get closer to it, you notice there's holes in his feet, and you come to realise it's a homeless Jesus statue. I make sure we go to the Church of Our Lady in St. Nicholas' grounds on a walking tour, because we do have a massive homeless problem in this city. Over the years, part of the religious background, I worked with one homeless charity in the city. And then once I left the church and everything, I worked with another homeless charity in the city. And I won't mention which homeless charities they are. But one thing I became more than aware of is Liverpool looks after its homeless extremely well. The homeless in this city do tend to have at least one group every night of the week who'll go around feeding them, sorting out blankets and sleeping bags and whatever they need. So the homeless are very well looked after in this city. But I do know that's a sensitive subject within the city itself. For me as a tour guide, I make sure people, the guests, my priority is the guests of the city. I make sure that they know that people will come over, they are well looked after. But just treat them with respect. The human beings, at the end of the day, treat them with respect, be kind to them, and that's that. But they are well looked after in the city.
Dale, what do you want people to leave when you've had a tour?
Well, the most important thing, I want them to leave knowing that Liverpool's a great city. I want them to leave knowing that the people of Liverpool are great people. Because that's another thing, and you know this, Pete, you've worked in the city for long enough. Every single time there's a bit of bad publicity about this city, that hurts the job I do. It makes my job that little bit harder, because people come here, and if there's just been a stabbing or a shooting or a like the failed foiled terrorist attack that happened a little while ago, that was embarrassing to say the least. That hurts the city, but people then get on a tour bus or they're on a bike or they're walking around the city and they ask me questions about things like that. I mean, the most asked people. I get asked about on tours, John, Paul, George, Jürgen Klopp and Derek Hatton. They're the top five people I get asked about on most tours, just so you know. Ringo's very rarely asked about.
I'm stunned, by the way. Stunned.
Derek
I know
Hatton
the story.
And the issues of the 1980s, whenever we get people from the UK, they come over and ask me still about Derek Hatton. Yeah. I get asked about Derek Hatton at least once a week, just so you know.
So is there a tour there for Derek Hatton? Derek will be listening.
Absolutely will be. I mean, the story's 1980s. I mentioned the 1980s on most tours I do. You know, where Liverpool was at as a city. I mean, the growth of Liverpool right now in comparison to 1980s is one thing, but I always like to remind people, for me, I was born in 1990. I am a child of the 90s. I wasn't brought up in the 80s. I only ever grew up Liverpool having a negative stereotype and stigma attached to it. So my job is never selling the Beatles. My job is selling Liverpool as a city and making sure that everyone leaves knowing that Liverpool is a beautiful place. That's what the purpose of my job is.
Dale, it's been fascinating, and we could talk so much more because it is fascinating. Tell us again how they can get in touch with you.
So Liverpool Eco Tours, basically I run walking tours at the moment and I'm wanting locals to get on it, okay? So very soon I'll be running a big local promotion for it as well because I do want local people learning more about their own city. I do those tours on Mondays, Thursdays and Sundays, and I also do them privately as well for corporate groups whenever they want. But yeah, they can LiverpoolEcoTours.com and contact me directly. So at Dale Liverpool on Instagram, just drop me a message and I'll help anyone out with whatever they need when they come to Liverpool.
And I've got to say that it's a great idea for a Christmas present. I know Christmas is a long way off. A birthday present, anniversary. It really is. I can't tell you why I'll go a tour on my city. You will learn so much. One fact that freaks you out every time you tour, that you go, wow.
Oh, wow, wow. That's put me on the spot. That'd be one fact. Just one.
I'll give you two then.
One singular fact. Well, for me, the biggest fact that, again, going back to the whole purpose of what I do, the Beatles were four normal working-class lads from Liverpool who changed the world. The world was never the same after the Beatles. They were four normal lads from this city. That might not be the most mind-blowing fact in the world, okay? But that is the fact. They were four normal lads from the city. There's no real difference between them and you and I, Pete. They changed the world, but they were normal fellas from the city. There is such a wide range of facts I could go into here, Pete. The maritime history. Canning Dock's the oldest working surviving wet dock in the world. I love the fact that one of the biggest side notes is that just where we're recording this right now, a little bit further down the line, the headquarters to the Titanic is there. Albion House at the bottom end of James Street. That little fact, when you're on a tour talking about the Beatles, but then all of a sudden you can just break away to go, by the way, that's the headquarters of the Titanic over there. That's a great fact for people to know. It's just so simple. But yeah, for me, the most basic facts are the stories, and the stories have to be normal. They connect with us. I talk about four normal working class lads from this city who changed the world completely, and they were normal lads from this city.
Thank you so much for joining us on our podcast. Why not subscribe? You know it's free. So join us and tell your friends. It's great going on walks and doing whatever you want to do and then putting Pete Price on. We've got a back catalogue of over 100 interviews. Join us. Subscribe. It's free.